mind other than a talk.
You guys did. pretty much it to give presentations here on the Meyer case.
Yeah. Could you explain a little bit about how you're going to present the Meyer case and how you got involved with Billy Meyer?
Sure.
How about we start with how you first got involved with Billy?
Okay. A little more than 26 years ago, I was in a bookstore in California, in Los Angeles area, and I saw the first tabletop, coffee table size photo book of the Meyer photos and some of the texts. It was stunning and just had a resonance of authenticity about it, so I bought it and read it, looked at it for some time, and there wasn't much more I could do except ooh and awe. And some years later, I just happened to meet someone in a little cafe in Sedona, Arizona, that had the transcripts of Meyer's conversations with these alleged extraterrestrials over a period of about 3 years or so, from 75 to 78 plus. And there were almost 2,000 pages. He gave them to me upon my return to Los Angeles, and I started to study all the information in there. And that basically triggered this whole process of investigating, researching, and ultimately being able to represent the case.
Mm. And have you had the privilege of meeting Billy personally?
Yes. For the past 5 years, I've gone over to Switzerland and spent some time with him and with other people involved in the case.
Yeah. Have you, while you were with Billy, did you at any time experience anything of that around him? The UFOs that he photographs?
No, I didn't experience them. Just about every time I've been there, someone who had been at the visit either a little earlier or a little later over the period of time had, there were plenty of sightings during this period of time by people. I would generally go home and go to sleep at the bed and breakfast and then find out in the morning that two or three people were watching the craft come about, that type of thing. It's actually, for them over there, it's pretty much old news. It's still, the contacts are still, according to Meyer and all the people, still going on. But that, the craft part of it is, they've been used to it for 30 years.
Yeah. He has come out with a lot of predictions over the years about, certain issues of planetary changes, wars, catastrophes, and he wrote them down, and a lot of them, those predictions have actually come to truth, haven't they?
So far, everything that they gave him as specific information, meaning where they would tell him a given event was going to occur somewhere specifically in that, and the details corresponded to what Meyer was told, and in all the searching I did on the internet, which he didn't have access to at this time, of course, it appears that with the exception of maybe one item, maybe two, he was the first source of publication of that information.
When you say they, could you explain it a little about who they are, who he's actually in touch with?
The Plejaren, Plejaren, are said to be extraterrestrial humans who are ancestrally connected to us, and their forefathers, they claim, were the gods of our antiquity in many, many cases. There were other extraterrestrials said to also have played these types of roles in our past. And so through their distant ancestors, spiritually and philosophically wise people who also have to do their 2 hours of work every day on the planet. Mm-hmm. So you don't have hierarchies. You don't have celebrities, and they're not there to accumulate wealth. How many pieces of paper do you need if you have access to a craft in which you can leave the planet and travel through the cosmos? You can learn the most amazing things. You can interact with other... give me green pieces of paper. Australian money is very beautiful. It really is. But I'll take... the capacity to do all this stuff. The price.
I'll take the ride.
Wouldn't you take the ride?
Yeah.
But the price for the ride is to give up acquisitiveness and trying to accumulate the excessively unnecessary amounts of material goods.
You can have my camera then.
Okay, I've been waiting for that. That's what this was leading to, I want that camera.
You want that camera? Yeah. So, that's amazing.
And they have to they have to conform to certain order, but they have great freedom at the same time.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that tonight people will be very enlightened with your information. So
I will wear a protective suit.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
They were connected vis-a-vis these gods, as well as through some of the either genetic manipulations and or matings that may have taken place also through some of these people with indigenous, slowly evolving earth people.
Right. So there's been plenty of interaction prior to actually getting in touch with Billy, with other people, these Palladians?
The Pleiarans?
Pleiarans.
Well, it depends. If you want to go back into the full history of the whole thing, yes.
Hmm.
They claim that this mission, if you will, has been going on for a very long time. If you go into simply what's said in the case, you're going back in terms of this being a, let's say, corrective mission, an attempt to get humanity back on path without directly interfering with us. You're talking at least 13,500 years ago. And basically, though they have had certain contacts with other people, their primary contacts have been then almost exclusively with one particular spirit incarnating over many, many millennia as different people. The distinction being, it's the spirit that reincarnates and the personality in person is different each time.
Yeah.
So they have put forth that they have contacted a specific lineage of prophets.
Right.
And just so people don't get put off by that term and think that there's some great exalted claims being made here, a prophet is basically a thankless job that somebody takes on, and there have been different lineages of prophets, it should certainly be said, but the prophet plays the role of an announcer of truth, a herald, not for the purpose of starting a religion or gaining a following, but for the purpose of helping humanity to become aware of errors in beliefs, in conduct, in outcomes that are as yet unforeseen by humanity, being somewhat blind as we may be to how the universe really works, that is through the laws of cause and effect primarily. So the prophets have come or been sent, however you want to look at it, as a remedial measure, as a very generous, almost self-sacrificial, without meaning that they're here to sacrifice, but a sacrifice of a lot of personal comfort, and they take on an awful lot of discomfort, pain, very often being attacked, brutalized, murdered, what have you, in an attempt to put on the table for humanity those things which we, if we have the wit and wisdom to do it, would look at, digest, learn from, and use to help make course corrections so that we have a more graceful and peaceful future.
Mm-hmm. And how difficult has Billy actually found getting that message across? There's been a lot of difficulty within the UFO fields themselves, I would say.
Well, yeah, we could say that the primary difficulty has been dodging 21 documented assassination attempts.
Wow.
That means that there are people out there that are going to an awful lot of trouble to try and eliminate a hoaxer, right?
Yeah,
right. People say it's a hoaxer. Huge, in terms of, let's say, the non-terminal type of attack, have come from, these attacks have come from the UFO community. Mm-hmm. People who simply say his evidence is too good to be true. Now there's a trap. You either have evidence that's too bad to be true or it's too good to be true. And to this day, many of the know-it-alls in the so-called UFO community rail against Meyer, attack him. They might as well be the skeptics. And the skeptics, of course, are another grouping of people. And I did issue a challenge to the top international professional skeptics to duplicate only one of Meyer's photos in one of his films. I did that in 2001. The international organization is known for Center for Inquiry, Center for Inquiry West in Los Angeles. They said that Meyer's evidence was an easily duplicated hoax. And I said, great, will you duplicate one photo? Will you duplicate this film segment? They said, sure. Almost 5 years later, they've been unable to do it. All they could produce in 4 years were six little photos of a model UFO that they then emphatically refused to have tested to the same standards of testing that had authenticated Meyer's as being a real photo, a real graph.
Yeah. But when I think of Billy Meyer, I think of the grown man who's the messenger. What about Billy Meyer as a person has a growing, you know, from a young boy to the grown man who's being delivered all these messages. I mean, how has he evolved from
little kid on up?
Yeah, on
well,
up.
That's another element of the story. It's so amazing. It's beyond comprehension in a sense, because his contact started when he was only 5 years of age, and they were not abductions. They were voluntary, and they remain voluntary, face to face, on board, on planet, wherever, contact with these humans from another star system. Over the years, well, to give you an example, his first teacher was a man named Svath, S-F-A-T-H, Svath, and he helped work with Billy from the age of five, I think perhaps up to about, oh, I'm forgetting the exact thing, it was something like 11 years, maybe 14 years, maybe something. I have it written down. But I don't
yeah,
know
that's all right.
So he told him, not only did he tell him amazing things, he gave him future histories, mm-hmm. coming events, prophecies, predictions. He worked with him with devices that were placed on young Edward's head. His given name was Edward Albert mm-hmm. Meyer. And by the time Meyer was 7 years of age, he had the thinking capacity of a 35-year-old man, which brought him enormous difficulties because he was really becoming an odd fellow.
Yeah.
Since he couldn't confide in anybody except one man, the parish priest, Father Zimmerman, he certainly couldn't tell his playmates, even his family for a long time, what mm-hmm. was happening to him. So he ended up being truant, being put in delinquent schools for periods of time, thrown out of classes. Mm-hmm. All this time he's having experiences that no human being has had to this day, mm-hmm. conscious, voluntary, mind-expanding experiences. When he's 14, Meyer published a letter of Spott's information with the help of Father Zimmerman and sent it around to 3,000 different people and you know parties around the world, laying out prophetic information about the events, many of which are happening right now. Mm-hmm. And he was totally ignored. Totally ignored. 1951. 3,000 letters. That's 50, as of today, it's 54 years ago. He sent yeah. this out. And when you see what they had, indicated at that time specifically, enumerating all these different specific things that were coming our way, you go, gee, why wasn't there one person or one party of 3,000 that took this seriously enough to start to, open their minds? Mm. Well,
do you think it was because of his age at the time?
It could have been, but then again, these letters were sent out. Maybe they didn't know how old he was, but maybe people just wrote it off as fanciful stuff. And in the ensuing, shortly thereafter, Meyer joined the French Foreign Legion. He was like only 15 years of age or something. He didn't like it. So in 6 months' time or so, he walked out across the desert. Very few people, little emphasis there for drama, mm-hmm. but very few people ever... survive leaving the French Foreign Legion, let alone walking across the desert to get out.
Yeah.
On top of that, he met many of the world's major players, people who would become world leaders. He met, when he was 10, Svath took him to meet Gandhi
mm-hmm.
one time.
Yeah, actually, I've read that Gandhi saw a UFO.
It's probably right there.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
Because I wondered, had Gandhi ever said anything to anyone else? So mm-hmm. apparently he did.
Yeah.
Meyer met everyone from Gandhi to Saddam Hussein.
Wow.
Tito, the Shah of Iran, the King Farouk. I mean, the most amazing variety of people. And of course, they were at various stages of ascendancy of power
mm-hmm.
back in the late 50s and 60s.
How did that come about, to actually be from a man in the country in Switzerland to becoming to meet world leaders?
Yeah.
I mean, how was that transition?
Well, let's remember he was prepared for this task by people who were, if they exist, they're pretty mm-hmm. advanced. And being pretty advanced doesn't mean just that they have craft to fly around. It means that they are advanced in their sciences, in their psychology, in their ability to transfer information, to teach. And he is said to be the current incarnation of a very old spirit, so mm-hmm. the capacity to work with that person, that young person, to bring him up rather quickly through the ranks of experience and knowledge. When you see the photographs, as we should be showing them tonight, of Meyer when he's 20 and 25 and all in all these different countries, you see a very worldly individual who's not just the little smiling, 5 or 8 year old boy that we first see. He's a man that traveled through 43 different countries on foot, 155,000 miles, picked up and did about 300 and some odd jobs in his time of learning and traveling. So he had been given certain impetus and direction, let's say. Mm-hmm. He had inside himself a consciousness that was very advanced, so he appears to be a very just simple, regular fellow, and does to this day. So perhaps with a little help from the Playar and his own wits, he wound his way around places and to meeting people. He made himself of service to different people as a translator or a private detective, a snake catcher, you name it. Mm-hmm. He did all these different things. So he would weave his way around. We have a photograph of him standing with two palace guards in Jordan at King Hussein's palace. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Zelig with Woody Allen. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Billy Meier is Zelig meets Indiana Jones meets Star Wars. Wow. And you put it all together and you've got a guy, because today people think, oh, he's that little bearded farmer with those funny UFO photos.
Yeah, well, that's what people in Australia probably think that's what he is.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
The depth and breadth of this case and this man's experience. What he knows, what he can talk about. To this day, let me put it this way. Right above his property in Switzerland, where he lives with his family and people and they work, there's a military base, coincidentally, right up the hill, right? Mm-hmm. A year ago, when I was sitting and talking to him for a while, he says, I have to shorten the meeting because I have some people coming from the base that have some questions for me about some health issues and things. I said, fine. He consults mm-hmm. with all sorts of people on all sorts of stuff, not as a guru or as a master, but simply as someone who has information about many different things. And indeed he does. He very often has been the one who will oversee the planting of the different trees and plants in the property. Since they took over that particular center, which was a rundown farmhouse with no floors, electricity, or running water, and they renovated and built it up, they've planted 10,000 trees in the property, in large measure to protect against the assassination attempts. Because there's so many people that wanted to shoot them, they put up a living blockade of trees, which has made the place very beautiful.
Yeah.
About his life.
So, he, as a person, is reincarnated as a spirit what would you say, an advanced being from another place?
Or? Let's put it this way. And this is what I call speculative information. See, in the case you have things that are factual, meaning not only have I been able to prove them, mm-hmm. anybody can. You just take the information, do your research, and go, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
Then there's the speculative information, which means I'm not in the position to or haven't been able to as yet either prove it or disprove it. And that can be information that goes back long periods of time, which we don't have access to means of determining the truthfulness or not, or future events that haven't occurred. As far as Meier is concerned, here's simply what's said in the case about him. And people have to understand that this is not done for any purpose of trying to start a belief system or anything else. Mm-hmm. Meier's spirit had originated long, long ago, billions of years ago, and had already run through the incarnational cycle of millions and millions and millions of lifetimes mm-hmm. in another star system, and had mm-hmm. been a major leader for a long time in a certain dynamic. It came back into the incarnational pattern, which is not usually ever done, for the particular mission of working, especially with the problems inherent to Earth humans, because of a connection via the Playaran people and their ancestors, and going back farther to whom Meier's original spirit form was. So in this incarnational pattern, Meier, the agreement, if you will, the mission would involve Meier's, we're using him in this term here, that spirit incarnating seven times specific lineage of prophets. Enoch, Elijah, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and Billy. Now, but if people haven't heard of Emmanuel, it's because his name got changed to Jesus and they formed a religion around it, okay? So that doesn't mean Billy's Muhammad or Billy's Jesus or Billy's Elijah. It simply means that spirit form is the same one that was in those beings. In all cases, we've had distortions about who they were and what their lives were like. And in every time, without exception, anywhere in this universe, a spirit form incarnating as a human being is simply a human being. They're not divine. They're not God, quote unquote. They are simply a human with a task to do. Because his spirit was ancient enough and had already been highly developed, it could volunteer to go back into the beginning of incarnation, in fact, all over again. Mm-hmm. So he has to go through evolution again, just like everyone else.
Right.
And in all the coming incarnations of that spirit form, he won't be a prophet again. It's done with Billy. He'll be another human on Earth, just like everybody else. He may have more higher developed spirit, more advanced abilities or something, but that won't be so relevant. This particular mission is for the purpose of bringing forth what they call the original and true teachings of the creation so that we can get on course. Now, the creation is the term that they use for this very universe in which we live. They say this is the living entity of all consciousness and creation in this universe, and there's billions of universes. We can't quite wrap our brains around all this. So let's just say that when we normally speak of God, oftentimes what we're intending is to say the most powerful, the creator of everything. Except they also say that in every single case, there, wherever you have a God, especially a God in the sky, you're always talking about more advanced humans who came here long ago as space travelers and then became addicted to the power of working with primitive, slowly developing, you know, Earth humans, and represented themselves as the creation. They called themselves God or Lord or what have you. And a huge part of this Pleiaran mission is to get us out of this mindset so that instead of behaving because we are run by our beliefs, that we will trouble ourselves to start to think, to examine, to reason, to incorporate logic, and to enter the age of knowledge and leave behind the age of belief. Or beliefs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a huge task. They see that this particular mission, this bringing this information once again, because it's not original teaching, this is ancient teaching, mm-hmm. once again, this is going to take 700 years to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
So how
far down the track are we?
We have 700 more years to go.
Before
we will become what they consider to be true human beings.
So what we have to do is discard the belief and go on the search of knowledge, because that is what's going to make us grow universally. Not a belief system, but a knowledgeable system of learning and growing and in that sense. Because beliefs cause problems.
Cause big problems. Now, in reality, as we know it anyhow, beliefs are not that easily dismissed. You tell a world of 7.5 billion people, listen, get rid of your belief systems and let's get into reality and knowledge and truth.
You're crazy.
You're nuts. Mm-hmm. And as we can see also, we have at least three major belief systems, maybe mm-hmm. four or five ultimately, that are going to be warring with each other, as well as the secular thoughts generated nations and policies and mm-hmm. peoples, and some of whom will also be aligning with beliefs. It's a mess because we're not operating on truth and knowledge, empirical knowledge. So for instance, I say to people, do you believe in gravity? And someone will say, yes. And I say, well, why? What do you need to believe in it for? It's a fact. You don't have to believe in it. You have to acknowledge it mm-hmm. because it's real.
Mm-hmm.
The problems with religion, without meaning to offend anybody's beliefs, but you know what? On the other hand, I don't care if I offend beliefs, because I don't care if anybody offends my beliefs. Someone would say to me, well, you believe less than so and less than so. And if they identify something I believe in, I'll say, well, okay, well, let's look at it. Well, you're right. That's just a belief. We all have beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people confuse values with beliefs. They say, well, you believe in this, that. I say, well, those are values I hold of human conduct. So if you go back to this idea of religions, let's say you've got six holy books or so, I don't know, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the Book of Mormon, Buddhist text, Tibetan Buddhist text, whatever, and you put all those in a nice big old long table, and you get 100 people that don't have any religious beliefs, and you say, we want you to come in, read each of these books, and I want you to line up behind the truth. You know, you're going to have people behind each one of those six or more belief systems. Now, right away, you know that if that's the truth, then that can't be the truth. That can't be. So suddenly we, in terms of logic, we're going to say, well, logically speaking, we don't have exclusive truth here, even though each of you think that's the truth. Because there is truth in every belief system.
Yeah.
But just like any other form of disinformation, it's wound up in control-oriented lives, rituals, superstitions, and hocus-pocus that people get fed lock, stock, and barrel, and in our innocence, our fear, any number of things, we adopt a belief system. Mm-hmm. And I happen to think that a lot of people go into religions for actually good reasons. They want to be good people. We want to do good because we have a capacity. We're not inherently good. We're not inherently evil. We are inherently a balance of positive and negative. That's the human spirit. It's a perfect balance, and it needs both to grow. We can't just be good. Mm. We have to also make mistakes, even deliberate ones, but we have to learn and then not repeat them. Mm. Hopefully, most of the mistakes we make aren't deliberate. But that is not a fault of humanity. It's a mechanism. The problem is when religions say, you are sinning, and there's a punishment for what you've just done, and it's an eternal damnation and all the rest of this, and we become enslaved by beliefs instead of by logic.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult. If your audience, if someone, if you are holding a strong belief system out there, and you hear this, you're going to think it's heretical, it's the Antichrist, it's demonology, all sorts of beliefs. Mm-hmm. You will be defending or attacking through beliefs rather than, well, what he's saying, simply what he's saying. I don't know if it's true or not true. Mm. How do I go about determining what truth is? And that's all, really, fundamentally, what the case is saying here.
It's search of knowledge. Can I get the knowledge? And then
knowledge.
Yeah, if you get the knowledge.
And that will bring us to a natural peace. Mm. And peace is not passivity. Peace is dynamic, it's evolutionary, it's cooperative, it's challenging. War is easy. We just give in to our lower nature, to our aggression, to our fear, and we bash each other.
So that's what Billy's actually doing. With some of his prophecies, though, he if you take belief out, right, and you've got the knowledge of what he said years ago and now it's come true, mm-hmm. it's not that he had a belief. He had the knowledge of what was being told to him, what may happen in the future.
Right, and in all fairness, he may have been told things that he didn't know would be true, but he relayed the information. He never said you have to believe this.
No.
Here's what is said. Type it out.
Believe it or not.
Or observe it and find out. Yeah. So when you get something as dire and heavy and dismal as much of the Enoch or Hanukkah prophecies are, you go, why would I even want to know about this if this could happen? Then and this is how my own process, I looked at maybe 50 years worth of prophetically accurate information. You have to understand there's no junk in here. Mm-hmm. They laid it out, and that stuff was occurring and still does, and things are still being validated and corroborated. You can almost, every month you're going to find two or three things. Myra's told before that now are so-called new discoveries. Well, when I looked at that body of information, I said, wait a minute. What they've done here is they've given us the most amazing, most significant, unparalleled body of prophetically accurate information. That built a foundation of credibility. Mm. Why do we believe or accept something as true? How do we know it's true? Well, if we get something and it checks out, say, well, that's true. Now you've got a body of truthful information given before things happen. That tells me one thing primarily. It warrants my attention to look at the warnings for today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Because they've proven their accuracy and they're showing their intention. Their intention is they've taken 50 or 60 years slowly to say, here's how we build our credibility. And now we give you the thing we're trying to warn you about specifically. Mm-hmm. So, if we as human beings have the wit and the wisdom, we will say, credible source. Believe me, my country went to war with Iraq on 1/1,000,000th of the validity of this information. You know, comparably nothing.
Yeah.
Here you've got, you've got 60-some years of, altogether, virus experience. And you go, ooh, pretty solid stuff. The most diverse areas. Not, we know this, therefore we go to kill people. No. How about it? These details, and then they're not telling us to kill anybody. They're saying the opposite. Basically what they're saying is, and this is for our country and anybody that's allied with it, the U.S., unless the United States of America withdraws from Iraq and all military occupation around the world, it will lead to a third world war. And the place that will get the biggest destructive result of that in the world of cause and effect will be the United States. Not a cheerful message for me or my fellows at home, mm-hmm. but one that they successfully ignore so far.
So that's one of the things that he's written.
He delivered
the message.
Yeah, in the Enoch or Hanak prophecies, they foretell the destruction of the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
They say this is only the beginning of even worse, more catastrophic events to befall the U.S. of a military / terrorist and natural disaster origin.
Mm-hmm.
Devastation, destruction, and annihilation at an unprecedented level never before seen on the planet will befall our country if we don't stop the policy. Mm-hmm.
As a Billy, as a human being, how does he cope with that? I mean, mentally knowing that these things, the messages that have been given.
Well, I would say it's a few ways. Assuming that he is as integrated in who he is as he appears to be, he's seen a lot over a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
as have these play arm people. They don't delight in this idea. They have emotions, they have feelings. They are not, untouched by the drama, but they cannot involve themselves. So knowing that humanity is moving in this direction is not a happy state for him. He's, mm-hmm. I've asked him, what else can we do? He says, just tell people to become peaceful. Show them the things we have to direct them towards that. And really, one of the core things, the new pamphlet that came out, essentially demonstrates and proposes the simple premise that the wars have to first be fought inside of you. In other words, that's where the core teaching of self-responsibility comes. In this case, what they're talking about is self-responsibility. If we begin to become aware of our thoughts, our feelings, the impulses to action, and consciously notice what we're thinking, feeling, and doing, with education, such as is contained in this case and other places too, where there are good philosophies and teachings of moral conduct and all the rest, we will not send out thought forms of aggression. We will not allow ourselves to be stirred up into hate and blind, anger and rage. We will not act those things out. We will think them through. We will struggle to come through a logical position. And this is not about pacifism.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say every creature in creation has a means of defending itself because there is always aggression. There's always attack. There's always a defense. Because in the dynamic, remember we're talking about positive, negative, good, bad, light, dark, yin and yang,
mm-hmm.
you need that for life to move. But there always must be a growth, a dynamic movement towards evolution and peacefulness. But that requires protection. So if people give up their means of self-defense, it's a spiritual crime. It's not only a right to defend yourself, it's a responsibility. If a person or a people discover that somehow they have bought into pacifism and we will always turn the other cheek, then we've misunderstood, because to allow yourself to be victimized is a spiritual crime.
Mm.
So it's very complicated. These people have weapons, they just don't attack with them, they defend with them.
Mm-hmm.
They loaned Meyer one of their antique beam weapons. He put a hole in a tree all the way through an apple tree. Oh, could he have drilled it? Not likely. Why not likely? Smooth as glass all the way through. Everything in a straight line into the forest is singed. When the investigators go and measure, they say, well, that's a pretty good trick with a drill. burned for as far as they could go. So they defend themselves. They protect themselves because they're human beings. And it, no matter, as long as you're incarnate in some form, from a little microbe to a highly advanced human being, you have to be able to defend yourself. And that maintains their respect and, necessary. But you don't go and aggress. For instance, the United States of America, my country, in the last 60 years, we have aggressed 200-plus times, well over 200 times, all unprovoked against other peoples and other countries that didn't attack us. The latest thing I just saw on the Internet, I think it was the FBI went and assassinated a man in Puerto Rico. Now, he might have been a controversial little fellow, but he was 72 years of age, sitting around with his wife, and he surrounded his place with a SWAT team and helicopters, shot him and let him bleed to death. Well, that's not exactly a good way to go. How dangerous was that man? Hadn't attacked anybody. These policies, what happens is we forget one of the primary teachings that actually appears in religions, usually, do unto others as you would have others do unto them, and that which a man soweth, so shall he reap. It simply means the laws of cause and effect. Take away any religious overtones. And it means if you push something out, when you throw something out, there is always an opposite and equal reaction. It comes back in its own time. Mm-hmm. We, in America, when we see things happening, be they natural disasters, attacks, anything else, we have to also look at the causative actions. Now, it doesn't mean that everything that happens to you, you've violated somebody or something. There's weather storms that happen and all the rest. But just like we've extracted all this petroleum and natural gas from the earth and upset the tectonic plate structure, which we were warned by the Pleiaron 30 years ago, this is going to lead to volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, tsunamis, floods, climate changes, you're burning down your forests, you're going to have catastrophes upon you in ever-increasing in frequency and intensity because of your ignorant action. So when you go out and you invade a country for so-called national interests, which aren't your business to do, sooner or later you pay the price. And if you look throughout history, there's always a leveling. One way or another, the pendulum comes back and cleans your clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. That's a big responsibility, getting that message over.
Well, it's a law of physics. It shouldn't be so hard, but we don't teach this in school. We teach all sorts of mumbo-jumbo and either, hyper-religious or hyper-secular stuff that it doesn't accord with reality. Don't throw it out unless you are willing to have it come back and hit you in the face. So if you're going to send out actions and thoughts, make them be the things that are preferred that you'd like to experience as well. So that way we create peace by treating people as we'd like to be treated. Mm-hmm. There will be people that will be irrational, there's no doubt. As far back as in the 50s, they told Meyer, there's going to be an upsurge of religious fundamentalism, craziness coming from many parties, and it's not exclusive only to Islam, but it is there.
Yeah.
It's in Christianity, it's in Judaism, it's in Buddhism, and it's in Hinduism. It's in all of these forms that start to polarize so much, and they have the one truth, and they're going to kill you if you don't take it on. Well, you can't just sit back and let people roll over you, but you don't invest in these people. You don't support them with your CIA and just try and direct them against somebody else, hoping they won't come towards you. Mm-hmm. It's complex. This is real life. There's no snapping of your fingers, but it's either we have the principles intact or we don't. Right now, we don't.
Yeah. And you personally, right, you've taken on a bit of a quite big task, getting that message out for Billy.
Well, I like it.
How does that impact on you? I mean, public reaction?
Well, as I say, the people that I've had the most trouble with have been the UFO researchers.
Sorry about that.
And the skeptics.
You're in Australia now, you should be okay.
Oh, well, I don't care, I don't mind. Because, you see, it's okay. I haven't gone through this. Billy's the guy that's gone through all this stuff. I'm a reporter. I'm a researcher. I don't take it personally. And if people are mad at me or at the material, I think, well, let's deal with the question. Let's deal with the issue. Let's deal with the challenge. If you've got a good challenge, what you're going to make me do is work harder. If I work harder, I get in there to refine and find out, well, is it possibly wrong? Is there something I don't know? Or, oh my gosh, it's opening up even more stuff. And so when you come back to the skeptics, with this next layer of revelation that their own challenge has provoked, it's like they don't have enough fingers to stick in the dikes to plug the holes. they're going, well, I'll stick my nose in it. You did. You stuck your nose in it. So, in a way, I say to people, this is the easiest thing to do. Easy in the sense that it's there. It's not filled with lies that you have to keep. Billy doesn't have to sit there and go say, oh, what did I tell you last year? It's this. You ask him a question. If he doesn't know the answer, he says, I don't know. If he knows it, he tells you the answer. I tried to trick him as I was talking to you folks earlier. I tried to trick him with something I'd asked him a year ago. The answer was the same. Boom, just like that. And he's had quite a few conversations in the years. We all have. He probably has had a few more. So you start to get a sense of a person's character and their truthfulness. Mm-hmm. And I consider it an honor to be able to simply report what I've found here. It's like I don't consider myself some big cog in the deal. There's other people who can pick up the slack if I'm not doing this anymore. And there are people around the world now. I've had visitors from at least 80 countries to my website. And I've gotten emails from all over the world now, the people that now have the DVD or the different books or the videos and stuff. And I'm going, okay, well, the cat's out of the bag. You've uncorked the bottle. The genie's out there. Like that sound there. So it's a done deal. Mm-hmm. And from here, it'll just be a...
Yeah, excuse me a minute. Oh.
So really, with disseminating the information and making it available to people, it's now it can't be stopped. Mm-hmm. It's a done deal. Mm-hmm. We may go through the changing times either dramatically and very, very painfully, or a little more elegantly, a little more gracefully. The more people that even hear about the case, you know, I'm representing this case, and I'm not saying there aren't other contributing things, but the more people that hear about the Meyer case and start to look, that realize that there's a peace meditation, probably one of the most important things in the entire case is what's known as a Salome peace meditation, an ancient meditation that's actually performed by not only some people here on the planet, but by 3.2 billion extraterrestrial humans on our behalf.
Yeah.
If we could get an expanded network of people on one weekend, 20 minutes, it's on my website, they can look and see how to do it, they can even get from Switzerland a DVD so you can hear how it's pronounced. We could make a quantum leap in peace, because what they've said is these are ancient, from the Lyran star system, ancient words that simply open the Akashic and help to dissolve some of the shroud of negativity around the planet from all these thought forms from thousands of years of negative thinking. And it's a Salome peace meditation. Salome Gamnam Ben Urda Gandibur Asala Esperona. It's kind of quick pronunciations, stretched out a little more than that. But this is done for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's being done simultaneously, as I say, by these extraterrestrial humans on our behalf. But it can't work fully without more and more people participating here. Mm-hmm. That put into motion is a huge thing that people can do if they sense that that's positive for them. Mm-hmm. Taking your peace symbol, remember your peace symbol from the 60s?
Yeah.
Turn it right side up. It's upside down. It is right now and has been for the past over 30 years. Literally, we've been walking around with the symbol of death.
Yeah.
The Nero cross, the upside down, the root, it's a symbol of death and militarism. It's a sword with the branches going down.
Mm-hmm.
And one thrusting thing, the peace symbol as it's meant to be, and that's shown on the website, it's a tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
You turn it upside down, and now you see those two elements that we're pointing down are open and up.
Yeah.
And it's an upward energy, openness, harmony, peace, life. And a simple mechanism like that, use it. Turn your peace symbols upside down. Feel free to take it and put it on your stationery. Start using that idea. And don't run out protesting for peace with a militant symbol. Embody that symbol. Use the symbol. And don't go killing people with it, you know, beating them over the head with it.
Yeah.
It's not the way to do it. So a lot of this stuff I'm giving, you know, the Cliff Notes version of it, but it's in the case. And there's plenty there that gets right down to how societies need to structure, what's appropriate for immigration in worlds where you still have various countries and boundaries and borders, why we should dismantle every nuclear power plant, how toxic that is, the proper way to have rotations of births to limit population naturally so we don't have to have pestilence and disease and wars and we bring... You'd be so surprised. You go, well, where's the UFOs? Well, that's the ships they came in. You know, like... In our country, you know, Columbus arrived offshore with three ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Okay, great, we got the ships out of the way. Who are these guys and what are they here for?
Yeah,
right. In this case, okay, well, it's very dazzling and fancy UFOs. Oh, extraterrestrials, how wonderful. Well, what are you here for? That's why when people talk about so-called contact cases and what they're photographing and filming, I said, I don't even care about UFOs because I can't do anything with UFOs. I've seen them. I've seen the best UFO photos and films in the world. Okay, now what? What's the content? What do they have to offer? What piece of the puzzle are they putting on the table for us to put in place?
Mm.
Not what are they going to do to set us straight. I don't want anybody coming to save me again because you're in trouble all over again. You know, no. What's the piece of the puzzle here? They put that one down. We've got our own. Okay, now the picture starts to come into shape.
Yeah.
And that's very much what we're trying to do here. Yeah. It's not dramatic, it's slow. Leadership, not from the top down, from the bottom up.
Exactly.
One person at a time. Someone who starts to get this and discusses with those, not to teach and make people follow or get involved. If someone resonates, if they're interested and you're talking, you start to create that network, that hundredth monkey thing happens, the ripples in the pond, all the different stones are dropping. Now you've got these different interference patterns that are creating a web of strength in consciousness, and that will be the foundation upon which a new world, not a new world odor, but a new world gets built.
Yeah.
So we're leaving that idea behind.
Yeah.
And
we're beyond.
We're beyond that. Yeah. And it's going to be very, you know, interesting the way we go about it. These are people, by the way, the extraterrestrials and Marquis have calluses in their hands. Mm-hmm. They work on their own land. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not dependent on that for their food. They have high, you know, agricultural. But these are people that have gotten back to the primary idea that you live somewhere and you work somewhere. And you take care of life and you contribute to your society and your society contributes to you. They don't have politics anymore and they don't have...